In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3 hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? This is Big Steel, the executive producer of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast and the CEO of Digital Soapbox Media. I would like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. But before we get started, I want to address a few things. As you all may know, Alex Alonzo is no longer a part of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Now, the reasons aren't important, but we sincerely wish him the best in his future endeavors. Now, as you know, the show must go on. I have some exciting news. Gavario Hunter, the former editor of Don Diva magazine, will be coming on as a host of the Gangsta Chronicles. Gavario brings a level of professionalism and resources that will take the Gangsta Chronicles brand to another level. Now, the show's format will always be for the streets. With that being said, we will be expanding our coverage to not only include the streets of Los Angeles, but hoods nationwide. So the crew will be on the road bringing you conversations from some of the most legendary people in the game. From the Nickerson Gardens to Staten Island's Park Hill Projects, it ain't a corner that we won't bend. This week, we have interviews coming with San Diego rapper Jail Felony. Then we hitting y'all with an interview with the Wu-Tang Clan's You Got. Future interviews are on the way from Rap-A-Lot Records CEO Jay Prince, rapper Scarface, and much, much more. Now, I appreciate those that have stayed in the car rocking with us for the last year. Now, my man Reggie Wright Jr., he will be back on deck at the end of August. He coming home. They letting him out. And he gonna bring y'all what only he can bring to the show. Big ups to my brother, James McDonald, for holding it down, staying loyal. When I thought of this show 3 years ago, I never imagined it would have the impact that it did to open the doors for us. So I appreciate y'all, the fans, from the bottom of my heart. Like I always say, without y'all, we ain't nobody. So stay in the car with us because we're going for a long ride. I'm giving a special, special thanks to my man, Charlamagne Tha God, for believing in us. It's a lot of stuff coming in the next few weeks, so keep your ears open. Now, on this episode, me and James sat down with Detroit, Michigan's Al Profit to talk about his American Dope Boy series and the economics of cocaine. This episode is appropriately called D-Boy Economics. It's the Gangsta Chronicles, y'all.
Life, really.
Well, yeah, I know you had your run in the street, right?
Yes.
You want to tell us about that a little bit?
Well, I am the proud owner of 4 felony convictions. And served a couple years, most recently in the for the crime of bringing what's now not even medicine, but weed, which is, you can use it without a card.
Mm-hmm.
I got caught with 50 pounds of recreational substance in Arizona and had to lay down for a year in that Tent City jail.
That's all?
Joe Arpaio.
For 50 pounds?
In Arizona, that ain't. Guys was getting probation for 300 pounds. Like, you know, that's a warehouse state. Remember, it's not pounds of this stuff that's $3,000. It's the back then it was the, you know, the AZ Reggie bowls. They were $300 each.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah. So, you know, here is enough.
Shoot, that Rex, you bring in the best profit sometimes.
Double up. Man,
you know, bring
allegedly, sir.
You know, yeah, allegedly. You know, the market was way better on some Rex.
Oh, more money's been made by far in marijuana than cocaine and heroin put together. I mean, up through the rise of the domestic, until the rise of the domestic marijuana industry or whatever, 10 years ago, you know, Sinaloa cartel, over half of their profits was from marijuana. And guys I know in Detroit, and I don't mean from being out of profit, just like doing documentaries, guys I know, I have multiple people I knew that, you know, are getting 3,000 pounds three times a month, you know, so making a million or two a month on weed, multiple groups of guys doing that. And so, yeah, big money in that. And like you said, the Reggie Bowl game was the best thing ever. Very bulky, but.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. So you started off doing music videos and everything else. Then you went into documentaries. Documentaries of the lick. I'm a big fan of that. Me and you got some stuff coming up that we'll talk about later on.
But that was in the DVD era.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of it, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So my off the camera here, my esteemed cousin and business partner, he did about 250 mixtapes. So he had a whole route of all the Detroit, because there's nothing open in Detroit but liquor stores and gas stations. So he, those were his retail locations. So, you know, he was helping me put my DVDs in there. But with every new release, you know, and the economy's so bad, there's guys walking from barbershop to barbershop selling three movies for $5, two Hollywood movies and an Al Profit DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And so there might be 50,000 copies on one of my DVDs and, you know, I sold 2,000 of them. So yeah. It was a limbo time, and it was before digital had kicked in, but I knew digital was going to kick in, and I met some people out here and partnered with them on their digital distribution company, Indie Rights, and it did kick in, and we all live in deluxe apartments in the sky now, thanks to our foresight and hard work.
Oh, for sure, man, for sure. Let me ask you this, man. Have you ever had any, because the stuff you do is real, like, edgy. It's dope, and if you guys haven't checked it out, I suggest you go check it out, like, right now. As soon as you finish looking at this show, go check that out ASAP. But have you ever had any brushback from some of the stuff you've been doing, like, from other crews and stuff?
No.
No?
Nope, because I tend to work. I'm not an investigative journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to solve any crimes. It's about the history. And, you know, when you're from communities like Detroit, where, like, crime is a big part of life, unfortunately, people want to understand, you know, why did this happen? Even the people that did it. And we're talking about, I usually talk about old events, and I'll work with the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people approach me, hey, do my story, do this, do that. And I stick to the facts. And as far, I don't let someone come on and say, well, I know who killed so-and-so. I just repeat what was in the court record or the newspaper and then place it in social context and history.
So, the only crime
I ever had once was a guy that was in it who was an active just drug addict and just wanted some money. But that was just like, you know, a little dispute. But that wasn't really what you're asking. So, no, I haven't.
So you do your homework before you
absolutely. And a lot of these people, I started off with people that I had some tie to, like my friend's uncle was somebody. And then after I did the first things and everyone saw, like, oh, damn, this is really good and important what he's doing, I got more personal ties, and a lot of these people were, you know, like, just my friends and in real life now. And yeah, so I definitely do my homework, because this, it, you're talking about, the more serious of a thing you're talking about, it better be right or close to right. I mean,
right.
When you talk about crime, it may not ever be the total truth, because you can't really, people can't say the truth sometimes, but it's got to be as close as possible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For real. So, you know, going back then, you talk about the DVD era, and, you know, you said your partner was doing mixtapes. As crazy as it sounds, the digital transition was great, but a lot of people lost a lot of money during that time. I know, like me, man, I think off of mixtapes back then, man, between, you know, distributing mixtapes, man, over in Europe and stuff, because I used to go to Otakon to meet them every year, right? I used to go from, you know, go from Con France to Midham every year, you know, meet with all the buyers and stuff, man. And I was distributing everybody's mixtape out here on the West Coast, man.
Oh, so you were doing European distribution?
Yeah, I was doing European distribution. And you know the thing about Europe, I was able to offer guys $8 a CD over here because I was getting 14 over there.
And they were selling them for 25 or something.
Yeah, you know, due to the exchange rate of the pound, because I was doing a lot of stuff in England over in Ireland. And the pound, man, at the time was like 2-1 over the American dollar.
So this is pre-heavy bootlegging, though.
Yeah, like, I was right on the edge of it, man. I probably sold, like, man, you know, that's, thank God, man, statute of limitations don't pass, man. I probably sold, like, man, probably about 200,000 or 300,000 mixtapes out there, man.
Like, so you was a criminal.
You know what? Not really a criminal, man. I was, you know, allegedly. I was helping people get their stuff over there. You know, we used
to. Is it against the law to do that?
You know what?
If there's songs that aren't,
if they songs, you know what? Technically, though, I was working with artists a lot of times direct. Now they might have been fucking over their record companies who they had arrangement with.
Oh, they're giving you songs on the cuff.
You know, they had songs, man, that might not have made a particular album, and you know the average recording artist out there getting robbed anyway. You know, on the way the point system goes, so they got these extra songs that didn't make the album because they couldn't get samples cleared or whatever else. Hey, man, I got these 10 songs, man. Can we put something out? I'll throw an album cover together, man, and put that shit out.
What kind of artists were you doing?
Shit, I was doing all rap, man. All West Coast gangster rappers, man. But you know what? What was crazy, though, a lot of the stuff, the big content I had, man, was like the Bay Area stuff and the underground stuff out here. Like, I used to sell a lot of Agrippa OG Daddy V's.
Tremendous independent scene, thank you, there in the Bay.
Yeah, you know, so I was selling a lot of stuff. Mostly from the Bay Area guys, man, they couldn't really get over there because their distributors was doing shitty jobs. So I kind of got into distribution. Then I met some cats over in Japan, was taking them over there. But I remember, man, I had a company to file bankruptcy on me. And I was owed like $250,000, man, like $250,000. They filed for BK, and I was waiting for that to come. I blew a bunch of money before that because I said, oh, I got another
They were
one.
Waiting for the BK to come, too. They knew it was coming years before, and they were spending the money because they knew they weren't going to have to pay their bill.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a crafty game. That's why I tell people, man, you got to get some change in that stuff. You got to hold on. And I think that
in the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial, Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN AEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Thing that makes it way better now. Now, this is the flip side. Even though I lost a gang of money, I was doing some shit I shouldn't have been doing anyway. But
you made a lot of money.
Yeah. Now, it ain't no cheats in the game. That digital footprint, you know what I mean? It's like you can't cheat. Can't nobody steal from you.
That's the beauty. They've really, like YouTube and Google, if you're on top of people stealing your stuff and you let them know, they'll take it down. It's great.
For sure. Yeah, it comes down. I do about 3 or 4 of those every week because people want to take little clips and put them inside their video like they was in there.
No.
Was that right?
Yeah, man, people do that. I shut it down.
They'll reload my whole documentary.
It's crazy, ain't it?
And try to monetize.
That's the craziest part to me. Now, if it's some dude, man, that got 300-400 views on some shit, man, and it's like a dude that got 3 subscribers on his channel, I'm not tripping off that shit, you know, because he don't probably know no better. It's probably some kid that just, you know, reloading his stuff. But when I see a dude don't put a whole elaborate production around our shit and make it look like it's just some footage of his, and we're so cold, they'd cover up our little insignia in the corner and put their shit right there.
Well, he uploaded it. That's how he figures. Well, you know, it's funny, to tie in back to your past question of did I ever have a problem. Kind of the weirdest hassle I ever had was I filed a takedown notice on a guy. I couldn't tell if he was in Australia or England. And it, like, got his YouTube account caught, like, 3 violations, so they were going to take his account. And he, like, was threatening me over the internet. You better tell YouTube to put my account back up or I'm going to come over there. Like he was, like, super mentally ill. Mm-hmm. I have cancer. I'm going to die. This YouTube channel's all I have. And then I'm going to kill you, you know. So that was my biggest hassle, enforcing my copyright rights.
And that was the biggest thing so far, man. You've been around a lot of people, man. And I know you really got a strong connection, man, with BMF, right?
Well.
Allegedly. You know, you guys are from the same soil and everything. How did that come about?
Well, if you're in Detroit, I mean, you're always going to be one step removal from someone in BMF, including people that weren't indicted and whose name is not known to the public. So we'll just leave it at that.
We just leave it at that.
But yeah, if you're in Detroit, you know, I mean, it's just like if you're in L.A., you could be a totally law-abiding citizen or something. You've got some type of uncle, cousin, somebody who's from in his world, you know. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, you're from here and you're doing this type of stuff, you can reach out to your Uncle James and say, hey, put me in touch with such and such so-and-so. So same thing for me in Detroit. I'm one step of removal from, you know, Detroit public schools, K-12. My legal address is still in the city limits of Detroit. My father lives there, so.
Yeah, me and you right from across the water from each other, man. I'm from Cleveland, so I'm
the mistake on the lake.
Well, y'all the other side of the mistake on the lake than Detroit, you know, because it's right there. You can throw a rock. But let me ask you this, man. You came up around the same era I did in those times, man. Take me back to Michigan, man, in like the 70s, Detroit, Michigan, the 70s and the 80s, because you guys was kind of like, we was kind of like y'all little sister kind of. Because we had the big steel mills, man, and everything, and the migration from the South, all the people would come from, you know, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama. They would come up north to get those jobs because they was paying $20
an hour. And all of a sudden, the jobs went away.
They disappeared, man. Can you take me back to, man, Detroit? What was going on in Detroit during that time once those jobs disappeared, man, and people started kind of like, what's the word I could use? When people became street entrepreneurs.
Right. So you had, in 1960, Metro Detroit had the number one median household income of any metro area in the United States. By 1990, the city limits of Detroit was the poorest city in the United States. So everything that happened in Detroit happened everywhere else. South Central, jobs go away. It just was the most extreme there. So the American dream is supposed to be you do better than your parents, you know, more money. That's not really, you know, the meaning of life, but let's just say. But the exact opposite happened. You had a lot of people, when they got to be teenagers or adults, they had less than their parents. And it's one thing if you never have anything, you don't necessarily want certain things. But if you grew up with a new car every year and a this and a that, and now you're of adult age and there is no walking to the plant and get a good job, people came up with elaborate, you know, drug, like the drug. It's interesting doing a lot of these documentaries and talking to DEA agents. So it's one thing to hear a guy say, yeah, my city is this or that. But when the DEA agents are like, yeah, I went to Detroit and I didn't understand how it was so loaded with drugs when it's not on the border. You know, the interviewed a very, within DEA circles, he's called the legend, John Sutton. He's like Shaft. He's like the first black undercover agent. And he was sent to Detroit in 72. And he said, you know, I've worked Mexico, every city in the United States. The only place I was scared was Detroit. The agents I was replacing, they had to move out because there were contracts out on their life. And you had the most black political and economic power concentrated of any city in the country. So, you know, the criminals in that community, they thought real big. And they wanted to be have power and be in control and do what they wanted to do, and they did. And a lot of unique things. You have a whole different set of immigrants there than you do. Like, there's very few Hispanic immigrants in Detroit, but you have Middle Eastern. And so there's a different heroin source. So we got the same heroin sources. Plus, whenever it's dry somewhere else, you got Lebanese heroin comes in. There's always heroin. And for me, like, I lived, you know, in one of the highest crime areas right in the middle of the city. I mean, it was really bad, but you know how it was? I mean, it's the guns you would hear at night going to sleep. You're like, what are these, you know, what is going on outside? And pretty frightening. I look, you know, you look back and you wonder, like, how did we make it out? You know, how are we still around? And when I go through neighborhoods like that now and I see young people there, it's like, man, I hope they survive it.
Yeah, man, it was a different time. Like I said, man, a lot of those guys, there were kingpins on your side of the water. I actually ran a lot of stuff in Cleveland, too. Northeast Ohio, you know, not just Cleveland, but Northeast
Ohio.
It's right there.
Hop on the freeway, it's right there.
So you had Cleveland, Toledo, and all those people would get, like, have influence. You would hear about, oh, man, this dude from Detroit, you know, runs this whole block right here, the next three or four blocks, man. You know, that time came around, man. How did that impact you coming up? Because I know it had a certain impact on me, just that whole crack era thing. And I think for all three of us, me and yours experience is probably very similar, but I know it was probably a little different from James's experience. You know, how did, I guess that's something we could talk about, man.
Like, well, I want to say this. So I hear, you know, hear rappers and like, oh, so-and-so sold crack in the 80s. You know, I sold weed all like a lot, but a few times there was so much cocaine floating around. And I was not someone known for selling a bunch of cocaine. Once I bought an ounce of crack from a guy, and then when I bought the next ounce, he comes over like, well, here, just take a half key. And I wasn't even somebody that was selling. I was like, I don't want that. So all these guys' stories, maybe they did have a kilo or two. So what? That was like having a pound of weed in 1990. That didn't make you anybody at all. Not even worth mentioning.
And like you said,
but
man,
they're making money off of selling these stories like it made them some gangster. Oh, we had a crack spot.
Yeah, you know, the thing was with selling dope, man, I think people put a lot on it. You could be the weeniest dude around, man, and become, unless, you know, you get in a situation where you got, you know, what's going to separate them dudes from the wolves is when somebody come and trying to, you know, take their thing. And another myth is that the smoker didn't have no power. They always show smokers on these TV shows is these people that are kind of just like, you know, shaky. I knew some smokers that were stone cold head busters.
A lot of
knocking
smokers
on the door.
You know what I mean?
A lot of smokers, just, you got to look at it like, before I was the smoker, I was this type of person. Yeah. When the cocaine came and everybody was introduced to the drugs and started smoking that shit, it didn't infect you like it do now. Yeah. Back then, you could smoke a crack cocaine, or you can roll a Primo, that's cocaine. It didn't affect like it used to, but as the years passed, motherfuckers' jaws started sinking in. And I'm talking about, it took some good motherfucking people down.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The mothers started doing the drugs and wasn't at home with the kids. Took daddy out of work, period. you know, you had some cats, their fathers was trying to sell cocaine on the side to make ends meet or coincide with their job.
Mm-hmm.
Nine times out of ten, you selling crack cocaine, you got it on your hands, next time you're going to want to taste that shit. And then you figure out what it is, then you're hooked.
Yeah.
I still see people right now today when I go to Compton still on that shit.
Been on it still since it came out.
I got an uncle, to be truthful, 60-something years old, 68.
Still smoking.
And he just can't quit. Go to
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Come on. If you go to prison and do 5 years, 3 years, you should be done. You shouldn't want to smoke a cigarette. But as soon as you get, you know, you come home, it's back to what you used to. So you got a lot of people that's used to doing what they used to do because they go right back into the environment.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Detroit ain't no different from Compton or Watts.
Yep.
It's all the same shit. They go right back to the neighborhood. And then you have the guys that's selling the dope don't give a fuck who they sell it to. You know what I'm saying? And that was the big problem.
How can you? I mean, the money's at the door.
Yeah, but you got to have some kind of morals. You got three kids up in this motherfucker. I ain't finna sell you no crack cocaine.
But just like James said, you know, it was a lot of people, man, that didn't have no moral compass because, see, the whole thing about the crack thing, I noticed, too, it wasn't just the money. It was the feeling of power that you had. Because them people that came, they actually needed you. You know what I mean? Like, if you wasn't there, I had a lady cuss me out one time because I wasn't there the day before. You know, the day before, she cussed me out. Like, you know, like, where was you at? I needed you. You know, like, it went off. But, you know, the power, too, man, I knew I had homeboys, man, who would tell me, oh, man, I knocked down such and such mom or I made her do this. You know what I mean? Just for some crack. So it was, you know, it was the power, too, man.
Oh, I remember seeing my guy, my friend, I mean, we were probably 14 or 15, say to an 8-year-old boy, go get your mother and send her down. Like make the kid go get his mother to come do those things. I saw a guy in my, it was another, so I lived with my father. At the end of our building, like a townhouse, was another guy with his son. And one day, I watched this guy and his buddy, first they going over like a across the street was Geneva G Street, like a Nickel Rock Street. Mm-hmm. So they're going over there, going over there. Then the TV comes out. Then something else comes out by like dusk. They had one of those little dollies and they're putting a whole sectional. Mm-hmm. He emptied his whole house out in like 8 hours.
Oh man, yeah, I've seen crazy stuff. I've seen those dudes in the hood, man, that got the good jobs, like with the city, man. You know, like them dudes that you kind of looked up to. You know, the dude that got the nice Deuce and Quarter, man. He got some rims on it, man. You know, just got his stuff together. Like, got the cute girl, man. Next thing you know, man, you see them dudes. The jewelry might be gone at first, right? But they still look normal a little bit. Then the watch gone. The next thing you know, instead of riding up the block, they walking.
And they're not going to work.
And then you see the little homie driving his car around the corner, driving his car around the way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then you see them as hobos.
We've been through it all, man. We used to rent the cars and do drive-bys out the motherfucker. Let me rent your car for 20 rock. And while he's sitting there getting high, we in this shit shooting at people. you know, the females used to come to the spot 8:39, because they knew motherfuckers was over there doing their thing, and they knew it was favorite time. So favorite motherfuckers in that, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't want to say, trick for ass and shit, but, you know, you had guys that fuck with that. You know, you had guys that was kicking it with you, and the mama come in, you know that's the homie mama, but she on drugs, and take her in the back room. So what I'm saying is, the shit really, when it hit, it hit. And it fucked up a lot of families. You know what I'm saying? And when you see how all the shops and warehouses closed down in Detroit, that's the only thing that happened. The people that worked there, they couldn't catch up because they was getting credit. And you know what happens with credit? If I owe you, if I got $200 worth of credit, by the time I get paid, it's $350. Now, I give you $350 out of my motherfucking check. I can't catch up with paying my bills and doing this and doing that. So you can't go back to work because you done lost your motherfucking job because you're looking a wreck. Because when the late 80s, that's when cocaine started reconstructing your face and shit. Mm-hmm. Had you looking totally different. You couldn't take it no more. And it just fucked everything up. You know what I'm saying? My step pops, it was cocaine and Sherm. You know, we were going to little motorcycle runs and the whole goddamn fucking beach up and back was nothing but motherfucking Sherman. Is everybody smoking them long more cigarettes, dipping them? So, you know, it fucked everybody up. It fucked everybody
especially
up.
Especially people that were already on the lower rung because they didn't have, they couldn't smoke up a paycheck and have money in the bank. Like, that was their rent for the month. Now they're on the street pile. They had no buffer in the best of times. And one bad weekend might wreck their life. And so my next documentary I'm dropping, an American Dope series called Cocaine Condor, and it's about the political events behind the glut of cocaine. And I say right at the beginning, it wasn't really a crack epidemic. There was a cheap cocaine epidemic.
Right.
And that allowed, you know, $3 dosage units of cocaine to come into existence. Mm. So 1980, kilo, I mean, even in Miami, it was $50,000. By 1989 or 90 in Detroit, and it would have been even cheaper in L.A., you know, $13,000, $14,000 for a 90% pure. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a, you know.
Shit, everybody can get it now. So back then it was harder to get it.
Because it wasn't coming in the country because the U.S. government had not facilitated it
right.
coming into
so
the country.
Right, so now it's easier. Mm-hmm. And the more you got, the less money you make off the shit. Because, well, you make more money because you got people stepping on the shit three times. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I don't even see why the motherfuckers even smoke that shit today because it's not what it used to be. You know what I'm saying? They adding and putting all this different shit in it. But your body is so used to that, let's
whatever
say that that flavor, you want it, and that's why you can't get people off of it today. You got motherfuckers going to the rehab a year, and coming home, sobriety might last 2 weeks, but it ain't no good if you go right back to where you started doing the shit.
Yeah, for real.
You fucking with your friends, fucking with your best friend. and you back on the bush.
If you don't have a replacement activity, you know, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. A lot of people don't, if you've been doing something every day for 10, 20 years, I take that away from you, well, you got to replace it with something. But if there's nothing, there's no jobs, like we said,
exactly.
You're in a community where everyone's doing the same thing, there's nothing to replace it with.
Yeah, you're back on it.
Yeah
that's look good for me. And that's the thing, I truly believe, man, that a lot of these communities haven't recovered from that, man.
They're not even, I mean, some of those places, you can't even really call them communities anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Places where there's some people at.
Well, you know, I could show you some places, man, back in Cleveland, man, that used to be thriving communities. I'm talking about grocery store. Everybody on the street got a job. Now you go over there, it's like you may have a vacant lot.
Tumbleweed.
The house over here empty. This house, this might be the family still trying to live in there. You got one at the end of the street, the people been kicked out of there, but they still squatting over there. You know what I mean? They've been squatting for 2 or 3 years because don't nobody give a damn about
the house. Because the house is worthless anyway.
You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, they got houses over there, man. You go buy a house. My pops was telling me, man, we need to buy some of these houses. They $5,000. And I said, yeah, and it's going to take $50,000 worth of work to fix them, motherfuckers.
And they're going to steal. Every time you put something, I know a lot of people try that in Detroit. So you put a water heater in there, they steal
it's gone.
Cabinets, they steal it.
Yeah, it's gone, man. It's like, you know, it's going to take. And they haven't recovered from that, man. And you mentioned the point earlier about the dope being easy to get over here, right? Because you remember when they used to have the real yellowish, greenish looking dope? It was so bad, it was just like, you know, it was horrible. It was like real brown, like, yeah, like brown, like, you know.
It was purely for cooking.
Yeah, it was just like, it was the worst dope ever, you know what I mean?
It changed when the Cali cartel, when the Medellin cartel kind of started to get weak and the Cali cartel came in at crack's height. The formulation and the U.S. government stopped ether being easy to obtain, so they weren't processing it the same. So a lot of people who were cooking a lot of cocaine back then told me that there was this whole new grade of cocaine that came in that you couldn't really even snort if you wanted to. It was only for cooking in the crack. So they were making it like that in Colombia.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the point earlier, man, about the government making stuff easier. Then we got COINTELPRO. So I truly believe, man, that a lot of this stuff has been staged, man, really has been aimed at, you know, and I don't even have to say just the black community, but just people that are undesirable.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Because you know, I know I grew up in Cleveland, and even on the east side where it was majority black, we still had a nice influx of white people, but they was in the same boat as us. They, you know, fathers worked with our fathers when they worked.
And, when
you know,
they worked,
you know, when they worked and they hung out with them, they drunk beers together, man, and it was just like, you know, it was just a real crazy time how that came through, because it's almost like a tornado hitting the town, right? But it's this 5-year tornado, 6-year, 7 tornado, and by the time everything is done, everything is just tore apart, you know what I mean? Everything is tore down, so now you have this city that people, they can't afford to go nowhere else, right? But they're there. And it's in worse condition than it was before, man. Did you encounter the same thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And to talk about the economics of cocaine and, you know, how to, and think 1989, the cocaine business was estimated as like 2% of the entire U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the areas it's being sold at, I mean, was it 35%? I mean, 1987, you pull up at a liquor store in Detroit, or I remember visiting New York and walking through Manhattan. I mean, just people were running to the, not even that you're known. I mean, I was like 12 years old. They're not even a known drug user. They just, so many people outside with drugs. They're just running everywhere. They're smoking crack outside or smoking crack in the liquor store.
And everybody was selling it. That's why I said any weenie could sell dope.
Y'all overlooking it. The difference between a broke crackhead, somebody putting money together to go get that rock, and the difference between somebody that got a whole bunch of money and can afford it and buy a gang of it at one time and store it at their house. And when they get off of work, they can make 5-6 lines and do it and be good. Recreational users, I call them. It's a whole bunch of people way higher than us that that they need that to get by.
You have a whole bunch of people in this neighborhood that we in
right now. Oh, yeah, they can afford it. So,
but see, is that, and that's the difference. Yeah. Being able to afford it, you'll never know I'm on it. You'll never know, because they're not losing no money. They can't go broke behind this shit.
Nope.
Only when they get reckless and have them wave parties and spend $40,000-$50,000 twice a month to have these parties and they start.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
The look, the part, as a user, but they got people to get them and get them back and snap them back. Unlike being in the city, well, being in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you're already at best. Yeah. It's already a tenuous existence.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. people overlook the people with money because they got money. They don't have to show like that.
Yeah.
But if you know a smoker, you will see it in them every day. I see them when they drive their cars. It's a whole lot of them in this city.
Yeah.
You see these motherfuckers with these nice cars, but them goddamn crack don't discriminate. And you could tell a user.
Yeah, you look like a walking dead, man.
So
a dead woman.
But it's a cool thing, and it's all about the money. And if you got money, you can disguise it for a longer period of time than my mama or my uncle or my cousin can just being in the hood. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because being in the hood, you got motherfuckers that use drugs. And they forget about everything, hygiene and all that shit, because they want to be right there. Don't want to miss a beat. You know what I'm saying?
And they need to invest so much time into getting the little bit of money they need. They like you said, they don't have the extra resources.
Right.
It's not a snap of a finger. They got to go out. If they need $40, they got to go get $40.
However they can get it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Now, what role do you think the government played in all this, man?
So it's very well documented, and I kind of put the pieces together in Cocaine Condor. So in the late 70s, as communist governments were taking power in Central America, and then 80, Reagan comes into office, and he wants to fund anti-communists, which really just meant the pro-business people in those countries. And Congress in 1982 with the Boland Act says, we're not letting you give any money to the Contras and other groups. So some of these Nicaraguan and El Salvadoran right-wing groups, basically a deal is made, and it's not the government, it's the CIA, which is a black box. They don't have to tell Congress what they're doing. If you're a drug organization in Central and South America and you kick 5, 10, 2, 3 million to the Contras, or you are a Contra yourself and you're selling, like with the guy that was selling to Rick Ross here in L.A., you get a get-out-of-jail-free card or don't go to jail in the first place. And so say we're all committing a crime, right? We're watching ourselves and we're doing it here and there. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, James, I got plug at the DEA. Like, we can't go to jail. You're going to, oh, open the floodgates. And we got it in abundance, and we're getting it for so much and so cheap. All the guys, you know, you're like, here, just take this on credit. I don't care. We're making so much money. And then now guys are standing at the corner store who used to sell joints. So the people in the neighborhood on Friday, they go get the little liquor and the $5 bag of weed. Well, now it's $5 for cocaine, but $5 bag of weed might last you the weekend. $5 of cocaine lasts you 5 minutes. And then you're back, and when you only make $5 an hour in 1985 minimum wage, well, that doesn't add up. It's real bad real fast.
Oh, yeah, real horrible.
That saying, smoke, so-and-so smoked up their paycheck, like, you know.
Exactly.
Saturday morning, you have no money.
No money.
You know, and as many of our neighborhoods turned out to be that way, man, what do you think the impact is on them today? Like in this present time where we at, 2020?
Well, these young guys now, like, they're, it's not that they're difficult to deal with because they're tough or something. They're just, I don't know, they're, I guess they're, you could tell they're a lot of them raised by female crackheads. Maybe they're not crackheads now, but like when they were little kids, because they're, everything is a kind of a lie or, you know, a scam, or there's no order. They don't think there's any repercussions. It's like you were raised in a crack house, because they were, because anywhere where there's a crackhead is a crack house, really, because someone could come sit in there and, you know, and I think that's why, you know, they'd have no, it's not even enough job skills. They don't even have the psychological mind frame to sit somewhere and be told what to do, because no one ever told them what to do ever, not even their mother, because he was a crackhead during his formative years.
Well, you know, and that's the thing right now, man. And I don't want to just get them, because you do got some young cats that's out there handling their business, you know.
Absolutely.
But for the
talk
most.
Talk about in general.
Yeah, but in general, though, man, you got a bunch of kids, man. The biggest thing I notice with these kids is that they don't have no drive to them, man. It's like everything is about the hookup, the plug. Don't nobody want to work for nothing.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got the hookup on, got the Airbnb hookup. Yeah, the Airbnb app.
Yeah, you know, and
like,
that's
what
the thing.
Hookup?
That's the thing. Everybody wants a hookup, but don't nobody want to put in a good hard day's work,
because they never saw any. How would you know to put in a hard day's work if you literally, see, that's hard to kind of believe. But now, like both of you saying, jobs went away. What are people doing? Well, imagine the people that were little kids growing up. No one's going to work. They never saw anyone go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And never saw anyone go to school. So, and the only people they saw to have something had the work, which those guys come and go. So where would they have a conception in their mind of like, no, every day when I wake up, I need to do something productive, not fire up a blunt.
Well, they've been taught to live a certain kind of way, not the right way. They've been taught by older people that's in their surroundings, older people. If I'm in a rut, and this was happening right now today everywhere, you got a lot of older cats my age don't think they can get nowhere, or don't believe they're going anywhere. So instead of showing this young man or that young man or these cats over here that you can make it just because I didn't, no, they teaching you how to sell drugs. They teaching you how to survive on the streets, opposed to getting you where you should be. And then these little cats out here growing up today, they don't have no respect for the next person. You know what I'm saying? Just this weekend, a friend of mine, and that's why I wanted to talk to Fimby, he doing good. He just seen one of his homeboys, and his shop doing bad. So he takes off his jewelry and shit and give it to him and tell him, get yourself out of debt. Rolex, rings, all this shit. Next day, he gets killed. He gets shot in the back.
The one who received the stuff?
The one who gave.
Okay.
And I just recently bought a car from him. You know what I'm saying? And they wanted more than what I gave them. So I'm like, man, I got this right here. I brought this. My nephew said, doo-doo said, woo woo woo. So this is what I brought. He took it. And the brother gets shot in the back four times.
We the people don't know, black people, young people, kids, don't know how to get out there and get their own shit. If you see it, and we used to have motherfuckers in the neighborhood that seen a motherfucker on Dayton's, and you're like, I'm going to jack that motherfucker for him. No, get out there and get your own motherfucking Dayton's. Mm-hmm. They're not living like that today. They want to take what they see. They don't want to work for what they want. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so when you were growing up, you saw some people living like that and some people working, so there was a choice. But the kid who's 18 now, and some not every, but it's the really bad neighbors, there wasn't anyone going. Some blacks in Detroit at 10 a.m. on Tuesdays or 8 a.m. on Tuesday is not people walking out, getting in the car to go to work. It looks just like Saturday night.
Yeah, hanging out, being gangsters and hanging out, trying to make a living, trying to make some money, opposed to having a mentality saying, okay, man, fuck this drug shit. Let me get a job. Let me go somewhere to try to find a job. They're not doing that, especially here. These little young dudes out here don't want no job.
Here, I was amazed. I've never seen so many adults here in a city, in L.A., that don't have their own place and don't even talk about it. Like, these guys don't even talk about, oh, I need to get some money to get a place. They just have come to accept that they'll always be on someone's couch or some woman's bed.
And that's what I just said earlier. They don't think they can get up out of here. They don't think they can be a better person. You know what I'm saying? And then they offer you GR, general relief, out here, and they give you $271 a month.
Now, what's that?
It's a program where you don't have to do shit, but go look for a job. Get these papers signed, say you went looking for jobs. Yeah, which motherfuckers do it themselves. And then you take it back to the county, and they give you a check every month. That's enabling me, because this $271 is good for me. You fuck off this month, I wait till next month, I try it again. You don't have it. It's not enough money to survive and do what you want to do. But motherfuckers have accepted the fact that this is enough. I can do this. They give you hotel vouchers. So they fuck you up, really.
Oh, hotel vouchers?
They give you vouchers where you can go stay in a hotel room for weeks at a time.
Who needs to work then, I guess?
Exactly. So they not helping you. They really hurting you more than they helping you.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Because don't nobody want to do
it. They're not using it as a springboard. They're using it as just, oh, this is what it is.
Yeah. Don't give away free shit, and then you'll see the difference. When a motherfucker feel like, damn, I can't get this money from my bitch prostituting, if I can't make money off of my weed, which they stopping that shit because everybody rather go to the goddamn building and get their weed now, opposed to hitting the block and get it. So it's pretty much taking you out the business. The crack cocaine don't look like it used to look back in the days, and you see the neighborhoods full. Especially you can tell a full neighborhood because you got cars up and down the whole block.
Yeah.
Back then you didn't. Motherfuckers was selling their cars, everything. If not, they was a piece of shit. But you got a lot of people out there just don't give a fuck and don't want to work hard, don't want to get it the right way. And that's the problem. You know?
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
You know what I'm saying?
I totally
whether
agree.
Mother or father, if you got them both, you're sneaking out doing this because you want to hang with the homeboys or the homegirls. You know, these little kids, when they get a piece of pussy or they get their first piece of dick, I'm running away. You don't want me to be with him? I'm gone. They don't want to listen to nothing.
Yeah, and it's the big thing, and the sad part about it is you're seeing generations upon generations. Like, I swear, when I was back in Ohio, we had a family that lived like five houses down. They was, you know, on welfare. It was, you know, two sisters living together. Everybody in the house, you know, packed up in the house. Everybody on welfare. They get they. You see them on the first of the month, coming with just the big things of juice and just, you know, like sugar. 20 bags of groceries. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they eating good, barbecuing for 2 weeks. Then at the end of the day, they borrowing stuff. Do you have a cup of sugar? Can they borrow
they
some bologna?
You
know.
Ration out the food.
Like, you know what I'm saying? They ask, can you, like, how do you borrow beans? How do you borrow bologna? You know what I mean? And my mom tell them, like, you know, the first few times it's cool, but then mom's like, you know, I got to feed my own kids. You know, you need to go get a job. And then, you know, my mom got one of the girls a job down at the clinic. The girl lasted all of 2 weeks.
Well, she doesn't want to be told what to do.
You know, they want to go. Well, they prejudice over there. They, you know, that's the first thing, prejudice over there, because you don't want to do your job. So, now, check this out. The same girls I came up with that was my age in that house, they in the same house. Some of them moved next door to each other. Because, you know, in Cleveland, they got these duplexes. But they, you know how it is back in the Midwest. You got the house in the bottom and the one upstairs.
Four family flat.
You know, four family flat. They got, they live over here. They live over here. It's like they don't took the whole block, all of them on welfare. Last time I was back there, I heard one of the older ones tell a younger one, girl, you know, if you go here to get pregnant, I'll let that one pretty nigga put a baby up inside of me because you go get a couple hundred dollars more dollars a month. And it's just like.
And to go out to eat in L.A. Is a couple hundred dollars. So you're going to bring a human being into the world for the price of a meal in L.A.
But check this out.
And that's cold shit. That's go ahead, Norm.
Oh, I'm sorry, but 1 second. I got this on my mind. The cold part about this situation is there are no men in the house. Because why?
I think then you don't get the payments.
Yeah, you don't get the payments.
That's what Section 8 is for. And I'm going to tell you why. That's what fucks us up. Because these chicks is getting Section 8. They getting these houses. They move a nigga in. The nigga can lay up and do what the fuck he want to do. Don't have to get up and go to work. He's being taken care of. Soon as she get mad and say, you need to do this, I'm going to get up and bounce. But at the end of the day, just like when the food stamps, the paper stamps came, motherfucker didn't have to do nothing. He would take the food stamps, trade them in for money, and be out there to do his thing. But when she put his ass out, he don't have nothing, and he not thinking about it. He don't have a hustle or nothing. So that puts him in the street. Now you're at the homie house, or you try to find the next victim that you can lay up on and play
victim,
that
yeah.
PlayStation game.
That is his hustle. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just being put in a trick bag, man, knowing that regardless of what, you got to do what the fuck you got to do to survive. You get you a goddamn job, work, take care of your kids. It's cats out there with 15, 20 goddamn kids and ain't got a job. At the end of the day, if you die today, you can't take care of none one of them kids.
Can't pay for your own burial. No
funeral. You a burden.
You, shit. Yeah, so,
you come in the earth, walk the earth as a burden and leave one as a bigger one.
So I was one that blamed the system and blamed other people. But if motherfuckers get off their motherfucking ass like I did and say, fuck that, I don't have to live like this, I ain't got to be like this, and this, I don't want to do this shit no more. It ain't going down no more. Pay attention and listen to what the fuck's going on. Grow up and be a motherfucking man. You will be successful. Mm-hmm. You ain't going to get rich, but you'll be
everybody
a better
motherfucking
person.
Everybody doesn't get to be rich, unfortunately. Man. I mean, you know.
Yeah, everybody's not going to get rich. That's just not how this life world works.
And the issues of, you know, economic injustice, racism, those are all real. But unfortunately, whatever the world is you're born into of whoever you are, you got to deal with the problems. It doesn't make that stuff not real, but being mad about it, try to solve it and change it.
It ain't.
But you still got to just get up and do something.
It's not being mad about it. It's more anger, just being angry about the situation. Even though I'm living like this, you don't have to put your foot in my neck.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Facts. Even though I'm a broke motherfucker and I ain't got that bail money, you don't have to charge me with this knowing I can't bail out of jail. Don't pump shit up and don't. I mean, every day is a struggle.
Yeah, the driver's license thing and the traffic tickets. Cause
that
I know,
shit is crazy.
Yeah, where you, the driver's responsibility fee. So you get pulled over, you couldn't afford car insurance. So like in Michigan, that's like a couple $100 ticket, but you got this driver's responsibility fee for driver no insurance, $1,500. So you're taking someone who already couldn't afford a $300 bill. Mm-hmm. Now they got an $1,800, but they're never going to have a license, and they're going to be in and out of jail for traffic tickets.
Exactly.
You're giving people 6 months for driving on suspended license.
And that's
sad. It's ridiculous.
They want their money, though.
It's ridiculous.
They want their
money. And then if they, that's just, so if you ever get a settlement or you happen to get some type of job, they're going to take the money.
They're going to get paid.
Yeah, it's real.
You never can get ahead.
It's real foul now, man, and that's the biggest thing, man. I'm just like, especially with all the stuff going on in the world now, man, I really just hope that we can get it together.
Yeah, hopefully there's been a little reset button, and I hope everyone, though I doubt it, has been using their time to think about their own lives and behavior, about the world and how they relate with others, and we'll see if some of us and some people will change, probably like all through history, most people won't, but economy is going to be different in the coming years ahead. A lot of these jobs and businesses that close are not going to reopen. My formal education is in economics, so like I think about it, like I'll read the Bureau of Labor Statistics report on stuff, and like the restaurant, the waiter job, that was like the last like white people without a college degree
right.
could go be a waiter somewhere, because you know in LA, if you're not white, you're not going to be a waiter anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But those jobs ain't going to be there. So the non-white people have been dealing with not being able to fully be in the economy for a while, but now you're going to see a lot of white people can't get a job. And what's going to happen then?
Yeah, it's going to be... Ooh, oh, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, for real.
You know, it's going to be crazy right now, man, because I'm looking at people can't even handle the little structure. Somebody tell them to wear a mask in the store. I'm seeing people lose their minds in the grocery store. Why do I back up? Why are you threatening?
I don't like being at work anymore. Like, I stopped going to the expensive restaurants in L.A. because, like, the waiter, they want to act like they're not the waiter. Hey, what's up? It's like, oh, I'll grab you some food while I'm walking by the kitchen. Like, no. Tell me your name's Bobby, and you'll be my waiter tonight.
Yeah.
And get my ketchup.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, man. You know, and this is just, it's wild times now, man. I'm looking at, like, I really think we got a problem in the United States, period, man, is that when somebody tell us what to do that's the best for us, oh, you're impeding on my rights.
Yeah.
It's like, man, motherfucker, they're telling everybody to wear a mask so this shit can go away. So wear a mask
just
when you go outside.
Just participate, even if it's stupid.
Just
go
participate,
along with
you know
society.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Ain't nobody asking you to wear a mask in your house. Ain't nobody asking you to wear a mask in your car. But when you go to the grocery store, put your mask on. Go in and get what you got to get in your car and take the shit off.
That's just some just in case type of shit. How you don't want to wear a mask and you're walking with three kids? How you want
to
go and hang out?
Just to make the same, if you two are going to be uncomfortable by me not having one on, even if I thought it was stupid, just because you're two other human beings, I'll just do it to not bother you.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I'm seeing people lose the people losing their damn mind behind that.
Look at me. I refuse to wear a mask at Walmart. I'm a hero.
Well, hell, Donald Trump don't want to wear a mask, so if he ain't got to, I ain't got to.
And there's a spike in cases in Tulsa where he had his first campaign rally on Juneteenth, coincidentally, while he had his kickoff campaign on Juneteenth, and no one wore masks, and there's a spike in cases there.
Oh, yeah, big-time spike, man, so we hope everybody.
The president's bringing coronavirus around.
Yeah, we hope everybody out there staying safe from that stuff because it is very real. So, man, tell us, man, what do you have going on? What do you have coming up, man?
Well, you can go to AmericanDope.com. I have a lot of merch, but my YouTube channel is YouTube.com/AlProfit. I'm putting up new stories a couple times a week. The next episode of American Dope Cocaine Condor will be out. But something else that was real exciting that I was about to implement when this struck and now we can't travel. About 2 years ago, I did a pop-up museum in downtown L.A. where I created like a little museum using artifacts and photos and exhibits from my documentaries. Mm-hmm. Interactive, really cool experience. And once travel kind of opens back up, probably 2021, I'm going to do like a tour mm-hmm. that around the country. I'm very excited for that. And I'll be doing some podcast stuff with you guys.
Yeah, and, AlProfit will have some podcasts on Digital Soapbox with you guys. Make sure to be on the lookout for that in the next upcoming weeks, all y'all out there in the world. We got some real interesting stuff. We got a real big project, what I ain't going to talk about right now, with somebody that's very popular that me and you going to be doing. So, man, there's a lot of stuff going on, man. We really thank you, man, for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Man, for sure, anything you want to leave these beautiful people with?
YouTube.com/AlProfit, A-L-P-R-O-F-I-T. Thank you, Mob James, Mr. Steele. Salute, yeah. Digital Soapbox Network.
Yeah, make sure you guys, man, like this video, subscribe, leave a comment. You know, anything you say that's fucked up, I'm going to erase it anyway, so go ahead and leave it.
And my name is James McDonald, not Mob James.
Okay, Mr. McDonald.
All right, and we out of here.
Brian gonna kill that.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic. And at higher risk, get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.